minute ball. Get out of here in a hurry.
Just a bit outside.
If anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
It's time for Powell at the Park.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
Cubs, Sox, all your Chicago baseball news.
Dynamite drop in money.
Here's your host, Kevin Powell.
Play ball!
This is the third episode of the Powell at the Park podcast. Welcome in. I'm Kevin Powell, the host. Really appreciate you listening, and thanks to everyone who's given the first two episodes a listen. We're going to continue to crank these out every week, and hopefully you continue to listen every week. But having fun doing it, and appreciate everyone that's listened. If you could subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, rate and review, that'd be much appreciated. All right, on today's episode, I talk with White Sox general manager Rick Hahn. I check in with him and see how Sox camp is going. And had some interesting things to say about Zach Collins and Dylan Cease in particular that I thought were really interesting. I also talk some Cubs with Patrick Mooney from The Athletic. Now, I always like to start every show with, I don't know, a little, some audio that kind of caught my eye or whatever basically I thought was interesting from the past week. And as you'll begin to notice as you listen to this podcast more and more, and for anybody who knows me knows how much I love food and how much I like to eat. So what caught my eye this week were a couple things. First of all, I got an email from White Sox Media Relations, and I always look forward to this email. Every spring for the past 3 or 4 years now, since I've been covering Chicago baseball, I look forward to this email. And the email is from Sox Media Relations, and it's White Sox offer media tour at Guaranteed Rate Field for sneak peek of highlights for 2018 season. Exclusive media tour includes inside look at new food and spaces. So every spring, they invite a bunch of media members to go to Sox Park, and we get to try all the new food. It's awesome. They just put a huge spread out for us. We get to walk around the park, and they show off some new amenities and things like that. I just love it. And everybody at the station here at WGN is like lined up to do this because I always talk about this and people are interested to see what that's like. So anyways, I'll be doing that early next week. It's March 27th. So next episode, I'll have a full review and give you an idea of some of the new food that you can get at Sox Park. Staying on the food conversation here, ballpark food, Major League Baseball is holding a food fest in New York next month, April 21st through the 22nd. Tickets are like only $25, and people can go and try the best ballpark dishes from around Major League Baseball. I love the idea of it. I hope it comes to Chicago eventually. But every team can pick one item they offer up at the ballpark. People can go and try things out. You know, for example, Baltimore Orioles. We'll be serving the Chesapeake Waffle Fries. Waffle fries paired with a crab dip made of crab, of course, and cream cheese and mayo. Sounds amazing. I'd eat it. Red Sox serving up lobster rolls. Atlanta will have some sort of barbecue dish. There is Seattle's doing toasted grasshoppers. Come on. I know eating insects is a thing now, but I'm not interested in eating grasshoppers at a ball game. No, thank you. Tampa serving up a Reuben Cuban sandwich. I'd eat it. Washington has a crab grilled cheese. For the Cubs and White Sox, the Cubs got real creative. They're serving up a Chicago dog. A beef frank served in a poppy seed bun with sport peppers, a dill pickers, a pickle spear, tomatoes, onions, relish, and mustard. So I get it. You know, it's very Chicago. The food at Wrigley's pretty awful. I think they probably should have went with hot dogs because that's the best stuff at Wrigley is the different sort of encased meats they serve up behind center field. Now, the White Sox went with the Southside Horseshoe, and Horseshoe is sort of like a central Illinois thing, but I don't necessarily associate it with the Sox. I mean, obviously the best thing at Sox Park is the Polish sausage with extra onions, a little bit of mustard. I always ask for extra onions. They're going with the Southside Horseshoe, Italian sausage, fries, cheddar sauce, and garlic Texas toast. It sounds pretty good. I'd eat it. It's not very Chicago, though, and I don't think of the horseshoe when I go to Sox games, but sounds good. I would have went Polish. I also like the sandwich they serve there. It's like Italian beef, and then they saute it, and they mix in Merck's cheddar cheese, and then they top it with jardiniere. That's pretty damn good. So I love this idea of the Food Fest because there's so many foodies, myself included, out there and in the sports world. I always like to try different food at different ballparks I get to go visit. So, you know, the Mets are doing a New York deli pastrami sandwich. Makes sense. Pittsburgh, heavy Polish population. Pulled pork pierogi hoagie. Pulled pork, pierogies, and crispy fried onions in a bun. Good luck with that. St. Louis doing a salami sandwich. San Diego, Seaside Markets tri-tip nachos. San Francisco, a crazy crab sandwich, which everybody raves over. Haven't had it myself. Detroit doing chicken shawarma nachos. So, cool idea by Major League Baseball. I think it's sold out like in minutes, but I hope this is like a traveling tour every year. You know, do it in New York one year, bring it to Chicago, maybe go to L.A., whatever. Mix it around. So, I love that. So that's how I wanted to start the show with baseball food talk. And believe me, there's going to be plenty more food talk on this podcast. As I said, anybody who knows me knows how much I love food. I enjoy ballpark food. So we'll have plenty of that. Maybe we'll get some reps from the Cubs and Sox to talk some food and what's new at each ballpark. But next week's episode, I'll have a full recap of the media tour of Sox Park. We get to taste the new offerings. I'll have the latest there. I'll rate and review everything, let you know what you should spend your money on. That'll be in next week's episode. On today's episode, had a couple of great conversations. Of course, it's always White Sox and Cubs. It's mostly evenly split here on this podcast. So if you hate the Sox, just fast forward through it and go to Cubs and vice versa. Whatever you want to do. But I cover both teams in town, so we're going to continue to talk about both teams in town. I had a conversation with White Sox general manager Rick Hahn, and as I mentioned, and you know, I asked him to kind of grade spring training. There's been some pretty bad injuries for the White Sox, but there's been some really good stuff, some genuine relationships being built, and some other positive growth from certain players. So I started the conversation with Rick and just asked him to grade spring training for the Sox.
No, yeah, I would say it's been a very good spring. We were really pleased with how the young players who've gotten an opportunity have acclimated themselves at the big league level. Obviously, Eloy and Luis didn't get quite as much run in big league games as you would have hoped because of their setbacks. However, I think in the short time that they were able to perform, you saw a lot of things to be excited about. Dylan Cease had a marvelous spring and looks to, knock on wood, put any injury issues that he's had in his past behind him and is poised to what appears to be to have a very fine year ahead of him. Michael Kopech obviously threw the ball well. Dane Dunning, a lot of guys who were getting their first exposure to Ricky and the staff really made good impressions. And you touched on something from a cultural perspective that's very important to us, and that's the tone of what Ricky and the coaches said at the big league level and having our players understand that throughout our minor league system. And a lot of sort of the bonding or the cultural side of things that we put in place during the course of spring training does have a carryover effect as these kids go back to their affiliates, and we think we'll serve everybody well over the course of this summer and certainly into the future.
Well, just being in the clubhouse a little bit this spring, you can really sense the genuine excitement. It's a fun clubhouse. Guys are laughing. Guys are hanging out. Guys are playing cards. They're doing whatever. It seems to all have happened organically.
Very much so, and you have a lot of guys who are coming up together, who have obviously read the press clippings and knows what the expectations of them and this organization are going forward, and they're very much embracing it, and they see the talent that's around them, they see the talent that's coming, and as a unit, they're with pride embracing the notion of being sort of that next Sox group, that young core that ideally is going to coalesce together and put ourselves in a position to win championships here over the next several years. There's still a ways to go, obviously, and obviously they're not all at the big league level just yet, or likely not even over the course of the 18 season, but the work that's being done both in big league camp and then once they arrive in minor league camp and then throughout the summer at their affiliates, those bonds we suspect are only going to get stronger and is going to, again, serve the organization well once we're in a position to win.
Well, I want to ask you, Rick, I don't think you've been asked this question once, not one single time this entire spring, Rick, and that's, when will Michael Kopech and Eloy Jimenez be called up to the big league club?
You know, it's funny. We've replaced the questions from last spring about Yoan Moncada and Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito with Eloy Jimenez and Kopech. And frankly, I hope a year from right now you're asking me the same questions about Luis Robert and Alec Hansen or Dylan Cease or any of a number of the young guys who are in that next wave. And it was important to us to as we built this thing, to make sure that we had, in for lack of a better description, sort of wave upon wave of talent coming to us that was going to continue to grow this core over the course of the next several years. As for as was the case with Moncada and Lopez and Giolito, and will be the case with Kopech and Eloy, and will be the case for each of the next generations after them, they're going to come to Chicago after they've answered all the questions we've had for them at the minor league level. There is very much an element of development that happens in Chicago that can only happen at the big league level, given the unique speed of the game at the major league level. However, there is still some things that each of those players have to round out at the minor league level. Eloy is only 20. He's spent about 3 weeks above A ball. And while we suspect he is going to, ideally, if he picks up where he left off in Birmingham at the end of last season and makes a very large ballpark look small, and then ultimately, you know, has the other challenges of potentially AAA ahead of him, we suspect he's going to force the issue on us given the talent in terms of when his promotion comes. Kopech, you know, he's 21 years old. His career high in innings is about 135 or so, which he set last year. And by his own admission, and I think for all of us who have worked with him, we see, you know, he needs a little bit more work on the changeup, which he's going to need at the big league level. And as he's talked about, you know, some of the composure things that got to him this spring need to be refined. But both of those two are really good, and the really good ones have a way of sort of forcing the issue on you. And we suspect over the course of this summer, each of those two players will do that to us. Well, we call that a good problem to have around here.
You mentioned the composure and the changeup to Kopech. Was that your main message to him as he was reassigned to minor league camp? Is that kind of what you relayed to him? And those are the two things you want him specifically working on?
Absolutely. And we had a real good talk with Michael yesterday or the day before, whichever day it was when we sent him out. And a lot of the times in those meetings, you know, especially in spring training, they're not surprises. Michael knew from the start that our expectation was that he was going to begin the year in Charlotte, and there were certain things that we were hoping he'd get out of big league camp. So when you have those meetings, especially with a guy who's expecting to be sent out, you really let them sort of guide the conversation about what they feel they got out of camp and what expectations they have and what they feel they need to work on themselves over the course of the summer. And Michael was the one who led with being happy with the progress his changeup has made in a short period of time, which we agreed with, but also feeling like it's going to be an important pitch for him going forward, and he wants to continue to stay on it. And then Michael himself was the one who raised the composure issues he had a few times, and we talked about sort of what was behind that, and really, not shockingly, given his makeup, it was about, you know, the very high level of expectation he has for himself pitch to pitch, and when he's not executing a specific pitch, he gets frustrated. Again, with time and repetition, and age, that's all going to iron itself out, and is that level of competitiveness, when properly reined in, is really going to serve him well.
Of course, you have the general manager's perspective, but back to Eloy for a second. Fans and his teammates seem in awe of what he can do. A real special player. What was your takeaway from seeing him in a full camp with you guys?
As advertised, you know, we obviously had been a fan of his going back to when he was an amateur back in, I believe, 2013 was the year that he originally signed with the Cubs, and our pro scouts have thought very highly of him leading up to our acquisition of him last summer. And then once we had him in our system, our player development folks in both Winston-Salem and Birmingham, spoke extremely high of not just the obvious tools that are apparent to the naked eye, but the way he fits into a clubhouse, the how high energy and gregarious he is, as well as his work ethic and his responsiveness to instruction. And all that was as advertised over the course of the month or so that we had him in big league camp here. He's obviously an extremely talented individual. Everyone knows that. And once you get to spend a little bit of time with him on a regular basis, you realize that he's a pretty special guy off the field as well, which is just tremendous. And obviously the type of individual we want to have representing this club.
One of the guys I had a chance to talk to a couple times out when I was out there in the desert, also had him on this show, Lucas Giolito. Just a really, how would I describe it? He's very dialed in. He's very, like, connected to his game, his craft. He's you got to be pretty happy with what you've seen from him so far, the big league level and this spring.
Absolutely. I mean, he's a very mature kid. People forget the fact that when you spend a little time with him, that he's only 23, that he was a high school draftee, and a high school draftee who needed Tommy John at the time of his selection by the Nationals, and therefore, you know, missed some development time early in his career. From the start, when we first acquired Lucas, you could tell that he understood his mechanics very well, that he was a very realistic self-evaluator about where he was and what he needed to do to get better. The pure stuff and ability was always there, and it was really a matter of fine-tuning the mechanics so to enhance his ability to repeat the delivery and allowing the natural talent to take over. And look, he, again, 23 years old, hasn't spent a full year at the big leagues, with each of our young guys, there's still going to be some growing pains that happen at the big league level, whether it's Lucas or Ronaldo or Moncada, even Tim Anderson. These are still very young players who are going to have fits and starts. But as they mature and they understand better what are their keys to success, and they're able to almost self-correct on the fly, which I think is really what you're seeing from Lucas these days, that is a skill that's really going to help minimize these slumps going forward and help them get back to producing at the high level they're capable of producing at.
Carson Falmer's had some command issues this spring, had some struggles, had a nice bounce back start earlier in the week, though. Would you fully expect him to be on the big league rotation on opening day?
You know, we haven't made that announcement just yet. We haven't had those specific conversations with what guys are going to be winding up in Chicago and which are going to be starting a year in Charlotte. But I will tell you that when you make an assessment on a guy like Carson, it's not just, you know, three or four starts in March. It's more about the body of work. It's more about his history, what he was able to do last year at the big league level and at the minor league level. And the specific work elements that we wanted him to work on while here in Glendale. Sometimes that creates more problems. For example, going back to Kopech's changeup, if he gives up a home run on a changeup, that's not necessarily a failure because we need him throwing that pitch. That this is more, that's more of a teaching opportunity than something that dictates his ability going forward. It actually, you know, some of those setbacks serve him well. And in Carson's case, I think coming in here knowing that he had a real good shot of being in the rotation, he may well have put a little additional pressure on himself to sort of seize that, or at the very least, once things didn't start out great, you know, that felt some of that pressure and that impact his performance. So it was real good to see him the other day against Arizona, against a good Arizona lineup at their place on Monday, have a solid start, keep his mechanics in check, sort of slow things down, and to be able to throw some quality strikes that we know he's capable of doing. So again, young kids are going to have some fits and starts. We have the opportunity ahead of us here in this season to really learn about a lot of our young guys and give them the opportunity to succeed and show they belong as part of a core of a next White Sox championship club. So we're going to err on the side of giving these kids those opportunities, because that's at the end of this year, it's going to be real important for us to understand which of our players fit into what we're trying to do going forward and how.
All right, before I let you go, can we do a little rapid fire where I throw a few names at you? You give me a quick scouting report and update on their spring and tell us where they'll start the year?
I can tell you everything, but perhaps where they're going to start the year. Again, I prefer the players to know first.
Okay.
But in general, I can tell you.
How about Dane Dunning? How's his spring?
Great spring. You know, Dane's calling card is that sinker. And, you know, we actually used him out of the pen a few times, which is not how he's going to be used going forward. It's with how he was used in college. But we view him as a real valuable pitching prospect going forward, a guy who's going to be able to give us innings and keep the ball on the ground. He finished the year in Winston-Salem last year. There's a decent shot he begins the year there again this year, just to get a nice start for the first, say, four or five, six starts of the season. And then ultimately, I suspect he'll suspend the either at the start of the year or after promotion, will spend the bulk of his season at Double A Birmingham.
Alec Hansen.
He had a little bit of a setback early in camp with some forearm soreness. Thank goodness, as I said, we already paid our tributes to the baseball gods through the other injuries, and the MRI came back essentially pristine or as good as you could possibly hope for on a pitcher. He is just dealing with that muscle soreness, getting that out, and starting to ramp back up now. So once he's ready to go, he'll be part of that Double-A rotation, and obviously he's having led the league, all of minor leagues and strikeouts last year, and given his physical tools, he's one of the finer pitching prospects in baseball, and we look forward to having him out there in Birmingham before long.
How about Zach Collins?
You know, here's the thing about Zach for me, and I get a little defensive on Zach because I think due to the low batting average or the low-ish batting average last year, there's this misperception that this kid had a bad year. Not only did I think he walk over 80 times and hit something like 17 home runs and had an OPS over 810 or 830 or something like that, all of which is really, really good for a catcher. Last year was his first full year as a pro. He played more games last year in 2017 than his entire college career combined, and he's doing it behind the plate, which obviously is the most rigorous position. And at the time as he left camp last year, it's really sort of the catching and throwing and the pitch calling that we're looking for the development from him over the course of the 17 season. He's going to hit. Everyone's always known Zach Collins is going to hit. The elements that needed to solidify were his defensive elements as a catcher. So he had a lot on his plate as a full-time catcher last year, and he still produced at an offensive level that I think is pretty darn good, despite people taking cracks at his batting average. I think Zach's going to be just fine. But you hit a nerve there about Zach, so I had to unload,
fine.
Even though all you did was ask what kind of spring did he have, which was a good one.
I was like, did I have a weird tone there when I said his name? I'll be careful the next time I bring up Zach Collins. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Hey,
I appreciate the opportunity.
Last player. I know you briefly mentioned him at the start of the interview, but I saw him throw some side sessions up close, and it was eye-opening stuff. Dylan Cease, to me, really impressive. What did you see from him this spring?
Boy, this kid has probably as high as upside as any pitcher in our system, and I include Kopech in that. Power stuff, great breaking ball, feel for the changeup, great composure on the mound, competitor. We're really, really happy with where Dylan's at right now. The thing with Dylan is that not actually too dissimilar from where Michael Kopech was a year ago. Dylan has yet to have that season that Michael had in 2017 where he takes the ball every fifth day and gets through a full starter's workload over the course of the season. You know, he had a little bit of an ankle injury last year that set him back for a period of time. He had some fatigue at the end of the year that set him back. Those are the kind of things we're looking to avoid with Dylan over the course of the 2018 season. Much as it was with Michael, we love this a year ago. We love the stuff. Take the ball every fifth day, handle that starter's workload, and the stuff's going to take care of the rest. And if he's able to do that, I think a year from now, people are going to be talking about him in the same way they're talking about Michael Kopech now.
I know you didn't go to the school, Rick, but are you on the Loyola train? All of Chicago's backing them right now. Have you had a chance to watch any of them?
I went to Michigan, so I still have a dog in
That's
the fight.
Right.
But I'm certainly happy for Loyola and for Chicago basketball. Yeah, I'm a little bit older, so I was kind of a DePaul guy growing up. Yeah. You know, I remember Aguirre and Cummings and Corbin, Dillard, Grubbs, all those guys. So I was a DePaul guy more than a Loyola guy growing up, but it certainly is good for the city and obviously good for college basketball to have a Cinderella there right from our hometown.
Rick, I could talk to you an hour, but I know you're a busy man. You got things to do. I appreciate you jumping on for a few minutes here, and thanks a bunch, and I'm sure we'll touch base at some point this season.
Sounds good. I appreciate you having me, Kevin. Take care.
That's White Sox general manager Rick Hahn. Appreciate Rick jumping on and joining us. I'm sure we'll touch base with Rick at some point down the road this season. Always enjoy talking to Rick. Always has a lot to say. So good stuff there. We go from White Sox to the Cubs. Talked with The Athletic. This is the third episode in a row I've had a member of The Athletic on. They're like taking over the sports journalism world, but a lot of good people there, so I reach out, and they're always willing to come on. So I had John Greenberg week one, Megan Montemurro from the Philly branch on last week to talk about Arrieta. And this week's episode, talk with Patrick Mooney, who covers the Cubs for The Athletic. You wrote a good piece about Ben Zobrist and how the Cubs are kind of in a good spot this spring. And, you know, I was out there for a couple weeks, and I got that sense as well. To me, the way I described the Cubs clubhouse this spring was it was very businesslike. And I don't mean that it was very serious. You know, if Joe Maddon's your manager, it's never going to be overly serious. But it does seem like they're all kind of on the same page and kind of on a mission this year.
Yeah, I completely agree, Kevin. I wrote that trying to get my day straight here. Yesterday, as I was flying back from Phoenix to Chicago, it was kind of my last takeaway from the ground there. And I think what you observed is right on, that they're focused, they're together. And we'll see excuse me, how long it lasts. But I think if you're a Cubs fan trying to figure out where this team is at, I think Ben Zobrist is a good observer of these things, and he called it one of the best kind of team experiences that he's ever had. So I think the Cubs are overall relatively healthy. They've incorporated a lot of new coaches who've gotten good responses, and they've created a comfortable environment for Yu Darvish.
Yeah, there aren't a whole lot of question marks, and we've heard Jed Hoyer say before that he actually prefers to have minimal amount of competition. And I guess it's sort of different on a team by team basis. Like for the White Sox, for example, they probably, you know, encourage that competition because they are a team that's kind of ascending and rebuilding, where the Cubs are like, okay, we're ready to compete for a World Series, and they put specific guys in place, but just not a whole lot of question marks. I guess for you going into the season, are there question marks? What are you keeping an eye on as we're just about 7 or 8 days from opening day?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Cubs aren't, you know, keeping their fingers crossed about, like, Brett Anderson as their fifth starter, which, right, you know, a year ago at this time, that's what they were as defending champs. I think what I'll be watching for is I'm curious to see how Joe Maddon divides up the time in the outfield and who kind of gets hot and who becomes, if there even is more of a regular rotation, or if it is just going to be, you know, matchups and things like that. And then I think beyond that, you're looking at the bullpen. I mean, they're going to be careful with Brandon Morrow. They're going to manage his workload. And, you know, I've written kind of about the Joe Maddon circle of trust. It's sometimes hard to figure out, you know, maybe the how and why certain guys are or not, but I think the Cubs feel like they've given him a lot of options here. And I guess beyond that, it is just, you know, you kind of took for granted the last, you know, season and a half of the Cubs had two of the best closers in the game in Aroldis Chapman and Wade Davis, and I certainly think Brandon Morrow can be an outstanding closer, but how the overall bullpen take shape. We're assuming Pedro Strop will be healthy. Maddon really likes Steve Cishek, what he brings to the table. And the Cubs keep talking up Justin Wilson. I think I'll believe it when I see it. But certainly, I think if you look at the pitching staff 1 through 12 or 13, Maddon thinks it's the deepest or the best stuff on paper since he took over here in Chicago.
You mentioned the outfield, and I'm curious this year, because we're hearing the exact same things about Jason Hayward that we've heard the past 2 years. He's working his swing, he looks good, he's confident, all those sorts of things. But we're getting into year three now with Jason Hayward and the Cubs, and like, do you think this could be a year where Madden, like, Hayward's playing time gets cut into a little bit? Maybe Almora even in right field, if you have Happ in center, Almora in right, Schwarber in left, because it's, I mean, he can't hit a baseball. We know how great he is defensively, but he's clearly having the struggles at the plate. So do you think this could be the year where they start kind of cutting into his playing time, or do you see Madden kind of sticking with him through it, even if he is struggling at the plate?
Well, Madden, like he says, and I believe him when he says it, is that he loves looking out from the dugout and seeing Jason Hayward in right field. And I think the Cubs, as an overall lineup, are probably going to hit enough to cover for that. Pitchers love what Hayward can do for them out there. So I think he'll certainly get a long run out there. I think they're going to give him a genuine shot to see if whether or not the extent of these adjustments sometimes is unclear. But they like the idea of Chili Davis working with him. Kind of a fresh start. There's no one who's more respected in that clubhouse. But certainly, we all can see it. We can see the way Ian Happ is playing. He's ascending. We'll see if the new slimmed-down Kyle Schwarber, what that means for him offensively. So he is certainly part of that outfield mix. I think part of it, too, though, it's a little too early to write off Hayward because, you know, Almora is going to like run into a wall or something like that. I mean, that guy just plays with such maximum effort. Ben Zobrist, do we know if his creaky back is going to flare up on him again? So I feel like there's enough kind of uncertainty going around that outfield that it's hard to like pin down Hayward as a part-time player. But you're right. I mean, those tough decisions that Madden's made in the playoffs of turning Hayward into a part-time player, I mean, certainly that's going to be, at the front of his mind the deeper we get into the season.
Madden says how much he loves Peter Borges. You think he's going to make the team opening day? You think Borges will be on the 25-man roster?
I think he's made this a very tough decision for them. I think he's certainly played his way firmly onto the bubble. He was brought in as the type of player Joe Madden loves to have on the bench, whether it's a defensive replacement for Schwarber late in the game, someone who could maybe steal base. He's seen as a good influence in the clubhouse. So if they do take seven, which I'm not convinced that they're going to take seven relievers, but if they do, I certainly think he's kind of that next man up. And you know, they're looking at, okay, they don't need him necessarily the first weekend of the season in Miami, but eventually, with all those questions in the outfield we're talking about, they're going to want someone like him, and you kind of want to keep him in the organization that way. So he's done everything they've asked. He has a nice track record. He's a solid role player, and he's at least forced them this kind of move off of this idea, which seemed pretty firm at the time, of an eight-man bullpen.
If it is an eight-man bullpen, who gets that last spot?
Well, I guess we're assuming Pedro Strop is healthy. To me, Justin Hancock, the way Madden talks about him, I can't guarantee he's going to be on that opening day roster, but Joe's made a point to talk about him as having A-list stuff, as having a lightning bolt for an arm. So I think that's guy. I don't quite get the love for Eddie Butler on Twitter or in these kind of conversations, around Madden amongst the media. I think, yes, I get he can be kind of a long man, but to me, the momentum was on his side last year as a guy coming in from Colorado, change of scenery guy, really excited to work with him. So I think if he does make the team, it's essentially kind of delaying the inevitable of maybe trying to sneak him through waivers later. I have a hard time imagining him being on the team from game 161 all the way through game 162.
Let's talk about the leadoff spot for a minute. Everybody wants to figure out who the next Dexter Fowler is, and there aren't a whole lot of teams in baseball that have a pure, genuine leadoff guy, and everyone's trying to figure out who's going to be the leadoff guy, and it's just going to be a matchup game for Maddon, whether it's Hap, Almora, even Schwarber or Zobrist. If you had to bet, who do you think does get the most reps, though, at the top of the lineup?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, Dexter Fowler wasn't even a leadoff guy for the Cardinals most of last year, right. So... I think it'll be, like you say, matchups. I think Hap will get some run there, same as Zobrist. And I still think Maddon hasn't completely ruled out the idea of bringing Schwarber back up there. I think we'll see how he hits, but Maddon is stubborn. He really likes what Schwarber can do there, and if he gets off to a good start, I wouldn't be surprised to see him there sooner rather than later.
How do you think Schwarber looked this spring?
Well, I think he looked good in that I didn't see him that often in terms of, I feel like he was quietly able to go about his business after years of being such a focal point on this team. I think Paul Sullivan wrote it in the Tribune a couple weeks ago, just this idea of Schwarber not being front and center, and I think in the long run that's probably good for him. Not that he was seeking out attention or is a me-first guy, it was just he was this larger-than-life character, and I think the best thing for him this camp is that he's been able to blend into the background, quietly go about his work, and I think we'll see that slimmed-down Schwarber will probably help him in the outfield, too. He hates, really bothers him, this idea that he can't play the outfield. He felt that a couple of plays in the 2015 NLCS hardened a perception about him that he feels is not accurate. And I think he's going to get a chance to show that he can be this player that the Cubs have really dreamed about and really developed a close connection with.
That's Patrick Mooney from The Athletic. Read his stuff at theathletic.com. Highly recommend you subscribe and read their stuff. Always great sports journalism happening there at The Athletic. So thanks to Patrick Mooney. Thanks to Rick Hahn, White Sox general manager, for joining the show. Hope to talk to Rick again down the road at some point this season. And I hope you enjoyed my ballpark food rant to start the show. That may have backfired. I'm not exactly sure how that went. Hopefully you you enjoyed some food talk. And we'll have plenty more of that next week after we get a first look at some of the new food they'll be featuring at Sox Park this year. Stay tuned for that. If you could subscribe and review and rate the podcast at iTunes and Google Play and all that good stuff, much appreciated. I'm Kevin Powell. Thanks for listening to the Powell at the Park podcast. Have a great day.